Hello and welcome back to another episode of This Expat Life. I am joined again in the digital studio and by no other than Wiebke Anten. And Wiebke works with expat couples and internationally mobile professionals whose relationships are under constant pressure from change and the complexity of life abroad. She combines a background in political science, mediation, and couples counseling with her own expat experience. And Wiebke supports people when communication starts to break down, roles shift, or important life decisions create emotional distance. And she helps individuals and couples regain clarity, emotional connection, and the ability to make sustainable decisions together. Welcome, Wiebke.
Thank you for inviting me to your podcast.
Yes, I'm super
I'm
happy that
excited
you're
to be
here.
here.
Yeah. Tell me first, where are you calling in from?
I'm calling from Germany, not very exotic place. We repatriated last year in October, and I'm calling from the Cologne, Bonn area at the moment.
Nice. And you were living before, right? So where were you in the last period?
Before we repatriated, difficult word, we were based in Rwanda, in the heart of Africa. And before that, we lived in Kyrgyzstan, which
Wow.
is in Central Asia.
Yeah, quite a few exotic places, I'd say, not very common to hear. Places that I can imagine are also putting a pressure on your relationship. Have you always worked with expat couples, or is it something that recently started for you?
Actually, it's started certain, basically in parallel to my own life. Just before we embarked to Kyrgyzstan, I finished my PhD and also my training in couples counseling. And observing all these challenges in my own life, I thought, I think this is really a group of people that would need a bit more support, a bit
Yes.
more, service offers, to support this journey and to facilitate better communication and facilitating decisions that feel authentic, productive, and so on. Yeah, and
Yeah.
this is what led me to working with this specific group of people.
Yeah, I so understand that. Thankfully, I've made most of my decisions on my own, but I was also once in a position where I had a relationship and I moved to Brazil, but we made that decision together. And I do see it with many of my clients that they are in a relationship and they're so used to making decisions on their own because they're very independent people. And then they get into a relationship and these international decisions come into play, either because of their job or their spouse's job, or one of them has a desire to move abroad. And this is sometimes where they get stuck because it's much harder for them now to make that decision. And I think that's also going to be the focus of this podcast today. How can you make good, solid, calm decisions as an expat couple, especially maybe when you have different interests or different factors that allow you to go abroad or not, or to explore certain things? So I would love to explore that topic with you today because you have so much experience in your practice, but I think also in your own personal life. Can you maybe tell me something more about the most common situations you see when people reach out to you that they feel like, okay, we do need a bit of support? So let's not talk about the couples who make the decision in one go and they are perfectly fine, but the couples who struggle. What is their situation like when they come reach out to you?
So I think, first of all, there are two very different types of expat couples. Couple A is or has been together already when they embark on their first assignment, and they build this international life together. So there is usually this, shared plan or shared vision. We do this for a certain amount of rounds. We know when we are going to repatriate. We have like a rough idea about how our family life will unfold during this international life. And then the group B are the couples who meet while they are living this life. And these two groups have very, I mean, of course, they have overlapping struggles, but they also have their unique pain points, I would say. I think that the overall reading or the overall impression is that it's so difficult for couples who are internationally mobile because the life seems very complex, and living abroad and not in your home country brings a lot of stress.
Yes.
But I think the big issue is that, especially for the group A people who start together in this life, they start to lean into the relationship more than they should potentially. So when you move abroad, so many things are left behind, a lot of identity building points, like maybe your job, your colleagues, your social networks, your family, your routines, they leave the stage and you lean into your relationship more and you start to develop more expectations than probably your partner can carry or your relationship can carry in the long term. So there are less escape routes, so to say, for each individual in the couple. And this, can raise frustration and resentment and certain loneliness, even though you are together
Absolutely.
all the time.
And couple A, is that usually the case for the people that you see that one of them got a job, and so that's why they're moving and planning, and the other person tags along?
I mean, when you ask couples who move abroad together, it's usually some kind of a shared decision, but it's in, I think, 78% of the cases because one person has a job and the other person is following. So it's only the minority where both people move at the same time together to a certain posting, for example.
Exactly. So there is some inequality there as well, at least for the job part. And what about couple B? What is their usual pain point?
I mean, the difficulty is that if the couple meets in the same place, at some point there comes the, a decision marker or like a milestone where the couple needs to decide how to move on from here. And depending on the stage of the relationship, this can be maybe sooner than it's, than the natural progress of the relationship. So maybe you're together for just 3 months, but one person has to decide, okay, where do I move next? Do I move next? What do I do? And maybe this feels quite early in the relationship to ask the question, okay, what will it do with us? Will you come with me? Do we have a long distance relationship or do we just let it fade out? So it puts a bit of some urgency into the clarity around the relationship itself. This is one, for example.
Okay, that's very interesting. So I would love to explore a little bit more what you do to help these expat couples, A and B, with their different decision points, because I assume that your approach to each couple is also different because they
Yes,
need a different kind of support.
So in general, my take on the matter is that too many couples compare themselves to how other couples do it. And I'm not saying you shouldn't learn from other people or, learning from different templates or blueprints, how other people design their couple life. But I think every couple should have their own couple culture. I haven't found a better word yet,
I
but
like
I
this.
like couple culture. So we know that about a third of all expat couples are intercultural couples, which is another layer of
Absolutely.
complexity, right? So sorry, your question was what, how do I work with them? Right.
What is your approach?
Okay. Exactly, my approach. Sorry. So we want to really embrace each couple's culture. And we want to step away from the need to force a consensus. And if you have a hard decision to make, it's always important to step back and say, okay, what is our concern of what are we losing if we decide opt for option A or for option B? And make it about the, let's say, emotional risk that each person is taking by accepting or disapproving of a certain option. And by being very transparent about, your in inner world.
Yeah.
This makes the conversation about the different options that you have much more productive.
Absolutely. Do you feel that expat couples are not talking about that deeper level enough when it comes to decision making?
I think they do talk a lot, and usually the clients I have are very reflected and very well educated people, for sure. And often they have read a lot of books, or they are very good in journaling. But still, when they talk to each other, there is a certain link missing.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of them are very good in expressing their emotions around the situation. But it's very difficult to understand that every decision you may take is reversible. So a lot of conversations are carried by the fear that whatever I decide now will forever determine who I am, who we are as a couple, how my life will unfold forever. So this fear of irreversibility, this really hampers these genuine conversations. And of course, there are some practical, mistakes every couple does.
Let's dive into that in a moment. But I just want to say this feeling or this fear that, oh, my decisions are permanent.
Mm-hmm.
I see that also with my clients and inside the co-pilot. And my work is also really to make them see you can pivot again. Like, you're allowed to change your mind and come back on your decisions. I can imagine, however, as a couple, it's more difficult, especially, and let's talk about this for a moment, if one person feels they need to give up more than the other person. So there's maybe a power imbalance. How could you approach that if someone has that fear?
I'd say full transparency, because we should not say there's not a power imbalance in expat couples. You can have the highest standard of being in an equal partnership, but the reality of expat life is different, especially if you are in a breadwinner accompanying spouse setup. It's not, there is a power imbalance. The question is, how do you handle it? And how upfront are you about it? And do you still have, or do both have agency in the situation? Please repeat your question just so I answer it.
Sorry, I was just wondering how do you work with them, or what could expats do perhaps when there is this fear of my decisions are permanent or irreversible, when some person has to make a sacrifice. So I've seen it a lot when I was a diplomat, where they would go abroad for a couple of years, and then the partner usually had a really good career too, but they had to pause it. For a couple of years, and they knew they were coming back, but then this person would still have to give up or pause their career, not sure if they could come back. And there's a delay, and then if they continue to go abroad again, it happens again and again. So what can you, as an expat couple, what can you do around that fear, like, oh, I need to sacrifice more?
I mean, from the outside, it always has this reading that it's about fairness, right? So one person sacrifices more and the balance is off. But I think what helps is to ask for recognition or praise for this kind of sacrifice. So that it's not being unrecognized or taken for granted. Because when it's not fully recognized, it can build up as some kind of resentment or frustration or guilt on the other side. And my advice would be to always communicate, and genuinely mean it, of course, that there's always the option to revisit the decision. So that for both partners, having the option to say, okay, it's not working for me anymore.
Do you even suggest having like an annual check-in on a decision? Regardless?
Yeah, this
like
would
the,
be great. Yeah, I love when couples do this.
Yeah.
I've met a few couples who do this like after Christmas and before the new year
Yeah.
to reflect on the year and then to talk about the next 6 months. And I love this,
Yeah.
but I also see how, especially for instance, during Christmas, a lot of families are occupied with visiting family or
Yeah.
having friends and family over for visits. And it's like from a practical standpoint, sometimes just forgotten, even though
Yeah.
the intention is there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I do like an annual check-in with myself every December, like without fail, already for the last 6 years. And I advise my clients to do the same. And sometimes they also started doing that together as a couple. But I can imagine that to have like an annual check-in moment for your decision on any random date, right? It doesn't have to be the new year, could be a good idea. What
Yeah,
are, sorry, yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
can I just add one thing? And I mean, I don't want to downplay that it's extremely difficult to open up this conversation.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of courage to admit it's not
Yes.
working to yourself first and then
Yeah.
talking about it to your partner.
Yeah.
So this has,
Absolutely.
yeah.
Yeah. So this is maybe why like an annual check-in would be a good idea, because you make it objective rather than I feel a certain way, so I need to raise the conversation. Right, if you already have a check-in moment planned in the agenda, no matter what's going on, there could be like an opening to having that conversation.
Yes, but what comes before that is to have this culture of, okay, let's do this as an experiment.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
there's no judgment around disliking it.
Yeah, so yeah, you're
It's so hard because so much is at stake, it feels. You think, okay, we've moved around the globe and now, I don't like it and I want to go back or I want to go elsewhere.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's hard.
exactly. It is hard. What are, because, I've seen this also in my own coaching practice with people alone or in couples, where it's easier to just pretend everything is fine and to kind of like ignore your own feelings about certain decisions you made in the past or upcoming decisions. What are the costs if couples don't start this conversation?
I mean, it's not a surprising answer, most likely, but of course the costs are high because if we are totally honest to ourselves, if we postpone certain decisions or certain topics, we think we are maybe protecting us and our relationship from unnecessary stress. Maybe we hope that it will resolve itself somehow or it will go away. Or also we hope maybe that some, external force aligns the stars. So we just need to roll with it. But if you continue in uncertainty and you avoid certain conversations, it's another setup for frustration and maybe a detonation at the end. And also, the question that is raised often, okay, how do I communicate what I need and don't want anymore without, making it threatening or without giving an ultimatum?
Yes,
And this is
exactly.
exactly the point. There was a point in time in the past where it was not an ultimatum yet.
Yeah.
So it's very important to talk about these hard decision, difficult questions before they become so urgent or
Yeah.
such an inner pressure that the only thing you can do is set ultimatums like, I can't do this anymore. It has to change now.
Yeah.
I can't spend another week in this country.
Yeah.
If I have to go to one more reception, I'm going to implode.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's your responsibility as an adult in an adult relationship to communicate soon enough and onboard your partner where you are on this, let's say, escalation
Yeah.
ladder, right? Because this, attempt to protect ourselves. It's only an attempt to protect this harmony, but the costs are too high in the long run.
Exactly. Yeah.
Even
So
though it's very uncomfortable to have these type of conversations as we had before, but after they are done, it will be so much better.
Oh, I think there's so much overlap in our work because I do this more on an individual basis, just where they are admitting things to themselves or just saying it to other people at some point. But it feels like a big mountain to climb beforehand, but after you've done it, you just feel such relief and it's so much lighter. And I think it really clears the energy in a relationship as well if you can have these conversations. Because it's there, right? It's in the undertow. You might not talk about it, but your feelings are there, and you might try to suppress them, but they're still there somehow, and people notice.
For this
Go ahead.
question, I had two small, check-in questions that you can ask
Oh, perfect.
yourself if you want to hear them. So the one that you can ask yourself is, what am I putting on hold while I'm not deciding? And what is the waiting doing to our sense of connection? And is it worth the postponement?
Absolutely. So I think that a lot of people who are not making a decision are forgetting that not making a decision is also a decision for the status quo,
Exactly,
and it
exactly.
costs
It's
you
not
something.
neutral. It's not neutral. And what I like to say in these moments is that a relationship itself is never neutral. Like there's like a romantic relationship is either growing or getting closer, or it's drying. So it's not just there. And when you continuously do things that are like not taking decisions, not communicating, not responding to your partner's bids for connection, and so on, this brings the relationship in the not in the neutral space, but away from connection, right?
Absolutely.
So it's never relationships are never just, dancing through space. They are always this direction or on the other.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, I love that. Sorry, I have so many questions, and I know I'm mindful of the time, but there's so much I want to ask you because you just mentioned about the people who are afraid it might come across as an ultimatum or a threat. I'm thinking about a few clients of mine in the Copilot where they have a wish to move and their partner doesn't. They are pretty happy where they are. And so what can you do if you are alone in that, I want to make a decision and move, but my partner is just, oblivious, or he's just really happy or she where they are. So how can you still start that conversation and express your wishes without making it sound like pressure or an ultimatum eventually? And that's, I mean, I know like we have the escalation ladder, but just to start the conversation perhaps, or this topic.
I mean, I can give some very practical tips if that helps. So, like the general advice for every conversation that might be conflictual or difficult or very complex, because it might have a lot of layers to unpack as a couple, is to not be hungry, ask for permission. No, I'm not joking. It's like
I'm that person who gets
seriously.
very I turn into a total bitch if I'm hungry. So
It's actually proved that judges make harsher decisions before lunch than after.
I've heard
So,
that.
no, okay, jokes aside, no. So, it's always wise to ask for permission or to talk about a very serious topic and to give the partners time and space to, be okay. I don't think I can talk now, but let's talk about it on the weekend.
That's
So not just, come and when you're ready, your partner's probably not. So really have this, okay, my partner in this very moment is my colleague, and I'm paying respect by asking, for the right timing to have this conversation.
I love that tip.
Right? Like this is the most easiest rule to follow, and then not Each of you should not be hungry is the second. And also, always good to think about a way to have a conversation where it's not overly formal for the very initial conversation about us. So, I mean that you can take a walk together or anything that allows your body to decompress any stress or tension. So you're not sitting there with a pen, like fidgeting and being in this board meeting situation. This really helps. And apart from this, the biggest advice I would give is to just start talking about what's on your mind regarding this topic. So not over preparing and thinking through like the perfect speech and the argumentation line. Really just onboarding your partner, what's keeping you occupied.
So one thing that I
And
always, sorry, if I may suggest my clients, if they need to share something that's important to them, is to really speak from the heart and to speak from, to bringing their emotions into the conversation.
Exactly.
Not by crying necessarily, but just by like, hey, I'm actually really worried. Because a lot of us, we have certain shields in front of us, or we blame the other person, or we say something, but actually what is behind it is a deep sadness or a deep fear about what the other person might do or whatever. And the moment you can express that vulnerably, that's usually when the other person also lowers their shield and you have like a heart-to-heart conversation.
Yeah,
Sorry, I
absolutely.
interrupted you, but
No, it's okay.
maybe also we didn't really speak that much about couple B, although I think there's the overlap here on how they can have these conversations, right? Are there any specific tips that you have for couple B who are with this in this time cooker pressure?
That's a good question. I need to think about this for a second. I think that it helps so first of all, what you said, really connecting with your emotions and being yourself truly, so that the next day you have this vulnerability hangover, but then it was good. Because this is everything that you can give in this moment. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. To me, it does. But I also preach this. I mean, bring your full authentic self to the table.
Exactly. And then maybe releasing the wish to find a consensus for the sake of it. But being like, okay, we have different options and let's make the decision-making process as authentic and like with the most highest level of integrity as possible.
I love that.
Right? So that we say, okay, both partners feel that their reality, their fears and desires are acknowledged and they have been talked about without already discussing the solution and the actual decision, but everyone feels seen and both have a real choice. And there's not fear or shame or guilt used as a currency to negotiate the outcome for your own purpose. And the cost of the decision is visible. And finally, what I said earlier, there is a clear moment to revisit and renegotiate or change course.
And the factor of time, which may be more, I don't know, present for couple B. How can you, let's say you're meeting someone just 2 months before you leave, like you were saying. What are then maybe some practical tips or other suggestions beyond what you already share, because I think they're wonderful, that these couples can use?
I mean, the question is, can both parties live with a long distance relationship, and is it feasible? And how long are both willing to do this type of model of the couple? And are both of them committed to walking the extra mile in terms of communicating long distance, nurturing the relationship long distance, and exploring the relationship potential in this long distance format. This is the question that I would ask each person to ask themselves.
That is a great question. Thank you for sharing that. And I guess also here it's very relevant that you don't compare yourself to other couples because you simply don't have a regular conventional timeline or settings. Okay, wonderful. Is there anything else that expat couples can do or where you feel like, oh, I see this mistake so often if they just do this, besides what you already shared?
I would say that a lot of perfectionism is embodied in our clients. Like being perfect in managing this type of life, having everything under control in a certain way, and juggling everything and being happy in this life, grateful, while it's absolutely not the easiest way of living. So in all these paradoxes, stepping away from perfection and this, wish to do everything right and allowing yourself to change course. I think this is what I would
And
tell every
it's also the hardest part because this is not just about a relationship switch, this is about their personality because they bring their own perfectionism into the relationship as well. So, I see that the biggest win might be here, but it might also be the hardest one to accomplish, I guess.
Just knowing that if one part of your relationship is not working, or you decide that this life is not working for you, or that it has worked in the past but won't, from now on, then this is not some kind of failure. It's just how everything unfolds in the course of life. And
I love that you say that because this is something that I speak about with a lot of my clients inside the Copilot as well. Like, one, they have this fear that it's permanent, and so therefore the decision must also be perfect because there's so much weight. But if you, I always see it like you're just gathering data and it's a hike. And so one time you decide to go left and you realize it's not the right path for me, you just return and you take the other path or another turn. And I think a lot of us, we attach so much weight to our decisions and it needs to work out well or perfectly. It puts way too much pressure on us. And I think if you start to see this as a long journey that you're on with different turns and stops and climbs and whatever, it becomes a fun ride. You'll just see where you end up. I think this is a really important one. Oh, Vipa, I can talk to you for probably another hour more. I think this is very interesting. Maybe a final question. When does it make sense to go to a couples therapist compared to, like a therapist on your own or a coach on your own? Since we both work in with similar people, when would it make sense for them to choose either one of us, for example?
Yes, I love that question because I think a lot of people wonder about it. So I would recommend that a person sees you when there needs to be clarity within the individual first in order to address the couple miscommunication or like the future planning of the couple. Because if you have two individuals who don't really know, okay, what is really driving me? What do I do with my life? It's better to see someone individually first. And then maybe with a bit of delay, see a couple savvy person. It can be a therapist, a coach, or counselor, or what else do we have?
I don't know. We've got so many things nowadays,
Because then you can bring what the lessons learned from your individual life coaching, for instance, into this. Okay, let's talk about what is our couple vision? What do we want to do in the midterm, long term? What do we envision for our family, and so on?
Great.
How do we make communication better?
Exactly. And I can understand for some people, like I coach a lot of people who are very self-reliant and they already have their own journey on their own usually. But I can imagine that there are some couples that have been together for such a long time that they kind of forgot, what do I want individually and what do I feel? And I guess you could explore that also within couples therapy, but to actually have that space for yourself on your own
Yes.
with your own person, I think that is very nice as well.
Yes, exactly. And if I may add, if the couple lived abroad together for a long time and your partner has been a main focal point, there's also this tiny, tiny concern that you want to protect the peace in the couple, right? And then some, not everyone, but some people lean more into adaptation and this feeling we are the same, we experience the same things. So it's very wise to then see someone individually to have this process of differentiation where you look into what really what makes you think, and what makes you defines you and so on. Yeah,
That's an
so.
excellent point. Yeah, I can see that happening. I work with a lot of people. When they reach out to me, they're like, I just want a neutral point of view. I want someone who is not involved in the situation and can help me see things clearly and can give me some advice. And I can imagine if, especially if you go to places where you lived, where you really have to rely on each other within the couple, because there might be less outside to explore, to find friends, and there's maybe less structure in a way for expats, that you re really rely a lot on each other, and maybe that could also add extra pressure to the relationship. Vivka, thank you so much for this wonderful interview. I'm actually very pleased because you'll be hosting a workshop inside the Copilot for the people who are navigating these big expat life decisions with their partner. So I'm very, very excited about that because I think it's a wonderful addition to the program, which is all focused on the individual, but we cannot neglect this aspect of their life too. So I'm very happy that you're going to be helping them out there in the workshop. So I will be seeing you more. Maybe a final question that I always like to ask at the end of every episode to all my guests. What is your number one hack to making living abroad easier or better? And it can be anything.
Yes, definitely. I did experience this too late, but I'm happy to pass it along. Definitely travel by yourself home. So, me and my husband, we both traveled to Europe separately, individually, without the family. And it was just really nice because we met friends and family, and just it was just us. There was no logistics around family travel and getting out of the house, out of the host country, and just doing something for yourself.
I love that tip. I've never heard it actually, but I can see why you say it. I think that's a great trip. A tip, sorry. Yeah, good. Vivka, if people are interested in working with you as a couple, where can they find you?
The easiest way is to go on my website, and there you will find a link for a complimentary call just to see what's the situation, where are maybe milestones ahead, what decisions are coming your way, or are there any dynamics you are dissatisfied with? And then we see, okay, is this something I can support you with or not? And then the journey continues.
Great. I will add the link to the show notes so people can click on it right away. Vivka, thank you so much for being on the show and for all your tips and sharing your wisdom. I think it was very, very helpful.
You're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me.